Good morning, Brother John.
Good morning, Jerry.
Yeah. Hey, John, where are we?
Where is this place? My God, I can't believe it. Well, we're fortunate enough today to be broadcasting from Castaways, and I'm sure you're wondering, where in the hell is Castaways?
Yeah, sounds like Gilligan, maybe.
Yeah, it does sound like we're maybe out there in the middle of nowhere. We don't know where we are, which is probably true also.
Yeah.
It's a beach bar and grill located on the North Avenue Beach, the premier beach on the shores of Lake Michigan in Chicago.
Yeah.
So Castaways is situated on the second floor of a structure that is shaped like a ocean liner.
Yeah.
So it's a unique environment. It's a unique place to be broadcasting, and sure enough, as we look around, there's so much to look at here from this vantage point up here on the second floor. We can look to the east here, and we're looking at the North Avenue Beach,
yes,
which is part of a 28-mile stretch of beaches, and there is no private beaches that you can walk back and forth, not necessarily on beach, but at least lakefront, from down the south side of Chicago all the way up north. So
it looks good. It looks great out here.
We got some waves, some white out there that we can take a look at. So what you find happening here at North Avenue Beach at Castaways is that you find a lot of volleyball and sunbathing. In fact, just a little south of us at Oak Street Beach, about six blocks away, there is the beach volleyball tour is starting yesterday and today, and it's also through Monday. So that's a standard event that takes place every summer. In fact, outside the state of California, this is probably their most popular stop on the pro beach volleyball tour.
I can see why.
Yeah, it's you know, and there's a lot of people, you know, participants. There's leagues that take place. So rather than having a softball league, you can come out here and have a volleyball league.
And the little boat that we're on, it's not that little. It's pretty good size. It's more like the Love Boat than like Gilligan's Island, isn't it?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
You could put a fair number of people on this boat, and there's a lot of tables and chairs ready for people to come out here.
We're in the party section.
We are, yeah. It's where the at night where the DJ would be swinging with the tunes. And before we get too much further into the podcast, I think it's important that we acknowledge the fact that Castaways was nice enough to let us do our podcast up here, and we owe a debt of gratitude to Steve Maszewski,
yeah,
the manager, and Juana
Valdivia,
and Brendan, who's actually the on-site guy today here at Castaways, who's been assisting us.
Yeah, he's been great. He brought us water, and we actually got an extension
cord, and so we're like kind of doing a really good job.
We feel like citizens.
So as we take a look at further on the west side, what do we have but Lincoln Park, largest park in the city of Chicago? We're on the south end of that park, and that park, you know, stretches north along the lake, and about for 4 miles. And so, if you're not here wanting to be on the beach, you can be on the bike trails and going all the way up to Lincoln Park, which includes the free Lincoln Park Zoo. That's one of three or four free zoos that you can go to in the States.
Yeah, it's my favorite zoo of all the zoos. It's not the biggest, but it's like very nice, like a boutique zoo almost.
Yes, it is. It's a small zoo that specializes in it has a lot of primates, gorillas, chimpanzees,
yes,
is one of their specialties. Now, stationed or situated in between the beach and Lincoln Park
are Mean Policemen.
Lakeshore Drive. Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you say, well, gee, it's not an expressway exactly. It's kind of a compromise, needless to say.
True.
If you would like to see it like all green, but they've got to, I guess, have some convenience for the commuters. So we're, and of course, the eponymous song, like, wait, got that word in there?
That's
sung
it.
By Eliota Haynes and Jeremiah, that made the drive very famous. Came out back in 1970. So, you know, we got Lakeshore Drive, and I'll tell you, when it comes to a place to be driving your car south and you're looking at the park, you're looking at the lake, you're looking at the buildings, it doesn't get much better than that.
No, yeah, and you may be looking at 10 to 20, too. It's a rough place here, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's the temptation when you get on the drive is
to gawk
and also to go a little bit faster than you're supposed to. I think the speed limit is like 45.
That can
and
happen.
I'll tell you right now, that car wants to zip it up there 75, 80 in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
A few people have gotten arrested on motorcycles who just couldn't resist the urge and have gone well over 100 miles an hour on the drive. I'm not encouraging that, of course.
Of course not. But man, it is a nice drive. And you know, one of the most cool things about Chicago that I've experienced since I've been here, several times, three or four times, I've turned to John and say, I feel like I'm on a movie set, because I've seen movies with that particular place in it so many times. You know, the tunnel underneath from the beach to get back onto the Lincoln Park. That I've seen three or four movies with that. You know, you go over to, you know, some other places we were at earlier, you know, at, what was it, Rush Street? The famous L Street, the one with the nice elevated trains that everybody films on.
Yeah, the Wabash down in the loop is a very famous street. I'll tell you, as we take a look south, we can look at the skyline of Chicago. And from as we look over the lake, we can see buildings such as the Hancock Building, the Willis or / Sears Tower, and unfortunately, we can also see the Trump Tower.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't see that. I think.
Yeah, my vision isn't quite that good. I agree.
No, I don't think I could
see
it.
Who wants to see that?
I don't see it.
So, anyway. So there's a lot to look at out here on this stretch of North Avenue Beach, and actually today we were a little bit concerned. Now, you know, weather seems to find its way in the news the last couple weeks, or last week for sure.
Yeah.
And we've got what I would call a very, very mild weather event here. But, you know, today is the first day of September, and the weather is just a little... Yeah, it's just like summer stopped on a dime, even though officially summer isn't over yet, because we've got the rest of Labor Day and a couple more weeks after that.
Yeah.
But what we have here is we've got about a temperature in the low 60s.
Yep.
And we've got waves, nice white waves. But with those white waves, why do we have them? It's because the wind is about 10 to 15 miles an hour. We're kind of situated in a place where we can
alcove kind of.
Yeah, a little
niche. We're sequestered.
We are very well. So we're not, in fact, we're hoping that maybe just in the background just a little bit you might hear a few waves.
I think you can hear them. I can hear them. So yeah. I think you can hear the waves coming in. You can't see these the volleyball people who aren't quite out yet, but
no, it's a little early for them. They sleep in usually. They have a hard sometimes after they play
tough
volleyball
life
out here. They maybe go across the park and maybe hit a few of the local libation places to have a few drinks and celebrate their victory or maybe drown their loss and then get up about 11 o'clock in the next morning and be ready to play volleyball again.
Yep. The young John.
Yes, those were the days. The days.
So anyways, we're here now, though.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we mentioned weather event here. Now, obviously, the weather event we're experiencing is excessively mild.
Yeah.
But it does bring forth in our thoughts the fact that other cities... south in Texas, such as Houston, are experiencing some weather. And what we'd like to do today is kind of talk a little bit about how different cities, the ones that we're familiar with, in my case would be Chicago, Jerry visiting me here for the last week. It seems like a month, but it's only been a week.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
And he's from Austin, so he can talk a little bit about that and then compare it to the way that planning has been done, or maybe the lack thereof, in Houston.
Yeah, and other places.
Yeah, I mean, and believe
me... You can't plan for
everything. Yeah, and I would imagine 40 inches, I don't care what city is going to be pretty tough to handle.
Yeah, that's a Mike Tyson situation. Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Ooh, man.
Yeah,
you usually don't plan to duck soon enough.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, people have had to do a lot of ducking down there, and we'll get to that for sure.
So, you know, the thing is, here in Chicago, I think one of the things that helped Chicago plan was the fire of 1871.
Yes.
Gave them a chance to realize some of the things that had gone wrong, like having wood structures.
Yep.
And then going and realizing that they could start from scratch and give it some thought and build using better product and not so much wood. And so if you, from there we've got, we had a city plan where it dealt with not only lakes, streams, beaches, but dealt with things such as boulevards and thoroughfares and the way that our city would be structured anywhere from the city business district all the way out to the residential. So it goes back to 1909, and actually zoning started here in 1919. So we have land use slash surveys being done that leads to an orderly growth. And by 1939, we've got the Chicago Planning Commission, which is still the group that, the go-to group that if somebody wants to construct a building downtown, they got to run it by the commission before it hits the check it against the zoning laws and maybe different things they might be able to give or take. One of the things we've done in Chicago that's been kind of good is that there's been a lot of people say, "Oh, you're throwing all the money to the big wigs downtown." Well, if you want,
I just got to say that.
Yeah,
you're famous for corruption, but even corruption works.
Yeah, if done in an orderly way in which everybody gets their share.
Yep. It's funny to say that, but you know, you're absolutely right, because you know the problem with other places, like some of the, we call it the Wild West, and everyone thinks of Texas when they think of this, and it's absolutely true, is that, you know, take Houston, for example, is they have no zoning. You can do whatever the hell you want to do. You can have a strip club right next to a Baptist church, and you do have those. And it's
do they sing to the music of the church at the strip club?
That is one of the things they have to do.
They gotta get some more efficiency
in
there.
There's rules.
Jeez.
And yeah, let's face it, some of that gospel is rocking.
That's right. I think the beat's there. They just need to learn a little more how to dance to it.
A little different nuance, perhaps. The Lord is being loved in a different way. But
so,
anyways,
what I was getting to is the fact that when you construct a building downtown and get it all approved and everything, they have to make a contribution, that those owners of that building, to funds that will help improve the economic development of the inner city residential areas, so that areas that are maybe in need of a little jump start in terms of their businesses and their local communities are getting help.
And by contrast, in Houston, that's called communism.
Yeah,
I mean, really? They what? You want to do what?
You're right. It's like me, I'm standing there alone, and I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, that's the plus side of it, too, is no matter who you are, you can show up there, and if you've got the grit, you can do it.
We did have one interesting situation here in Chicago where an individual tried to strut their individual self, and that is that as the fire of 1871 required that a bunch of ground be excavated, etc. And what they did with that land, that ground, is they then used it to landfill an area that is referred to now just north of the city. It's called Streeterville.
Right.
Well, Streeterville got its name because what happened is that land didn't have titles or deeds, etc. That was new land.
Right.
And a fellow by the name of Cap Streeter decided, I'm gonna put squatters' rights to use, and just kind of hunkered down and for a long, long time was in court. So, and what's come out of it, poor Cap lost his court case, but out of it, at least he's got a little section of Chicago called in the name of the area, Streeterville.
Yeah, he's got his own area.
Yeah. So as we take a look at what's happened in the orderly growth, and it's not always been orderly, it's had its moments in Chicago.
Yeah.
Out of that, we have, you know, the preserving of wetlands. We've got, you know, expanding the parkland, forest preserves, all areas which are very help in terms of drainage and the soaking up of water when you have the need for. And the other thing that's unique about Chicago is the Chicago River. And the river actually gives us an opportunity if we reach the flood stage, because you see our river through 1900 was like a normal river. You'd have all the pollution, you know, that would be going down from industry into the river, and that it would be dumped into the lake.
Right.
And everybody said, you know what, we're not doing a very good job of maintaining the lake if we do that. So why don't we actually have the river go the opposite direction so we can all have all that pollution go down to St. Louis?
Oh, we're from St. Louis.
Oh,
John.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. That's not good.
I guess it isn't. I hadn't thought of that.
Wow. But they did do that, and I think that's really cool. Tell us about that tunnel they're doing.
Okay, well, so what they've done is that this project has been going on for 30 years, and what will happen is that the idea being that if the rivers get too, you know, if the Chicago River gets too much water and starts, you know, dumping it into the flood areas, etc., what will happen is they do have the chance of actually opening the locks and pushing that water out into the lake. It happens a couple times a year
right.
when we have really strong rainfall. They've eliminated that need by building these tunnels, which is called deep tunnels. So that excess river water is now going down into tunnels, and that
it's
way
it's being reabsorbed by the earth.
Yeah, by the earth, and we have also the that creates less, you know, basements being flooded,
right?
Out particularly in the suburbs, but somewhere also in the city. So the deep tunnel project, which is still going on as we speak, it's something that's been going on for 30 years, is one way that they've tried to do. To handle particularly the Chicago River, but you know, fortunately, Chicago River is only one river that we have here. We've got other rivers in the Des Plaines River that
right.
covers the western. It's a north-south river that covers the western suburbs, and that one, if we can talk a little bit about, is one that's created weather events here.
Yeah,
you know, and the fact is that, you know, you hear about Houston. The good news is our event was very minor compared to that, but 11 or 12 inches that we had in July caused the Des Plaines River to overflow and hit a couple of the northern suburbs to the extent that they've never done before. So
right.
it just shows that as much planning as you do, you can't dodge all the bullets. You can
no.
dodge some of them, and maybe the bullet will just wound you rather than kill you, but the fact is that it's out there, and we all have that exposure no matter what city we're talking about. So, you know, we've had a lot of good things going on in terms of Chicago and trying to combat some of the, you know, the weather events that take place. We could talk about, know, the snow, and that's another topic. It's a whole other subject matter there in that
yeah.
regard.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's interesting about this is watching the news and the weather in particular up here, you see how great our country is. As you see Chicagoans donating massive amounts of money to the relief effort. There's various groups. Like there's a group that our boy Billy Joe Armstrong was promoting that does nothing but take care of dogs who have been abandoned, mutts or something it's called. And it's really cool. I mean, they're sending people down there to take care of the animals who are being abandoned and are lost and all that stuff. So there's a huge effort going on nationwide, not just Chicago, but everywhere in Austin, in our own neighborhood. We're taking in people who don't have anywhere to go.
They're close enough to Houston that they're able to use some of their larger venues,
facilities, yeah.
entertainment venues, etc. One thing I'd like to mention about that effort here in Chicago to provide relief, monetary relief to Houston, is that we were one day, we're put on the local news, and all of a sudden it looked like we saw all these people on telephones accepting donations, and I said, is this local news or is this a telethon?
Yeah.
It looked just like like Jerry Lewis, you know, the old muscular dystrophy thing.
Rest
it was
in
amazing.
Peace.
Yeah, it recently passed away. And so I was amazed. I thought, this is mind-boggling. Here, normally we would be listening to news, and a bigger part of the news here wasn't talking about the flooding in Houston, but it was more soliciting an effort to help those people down there, which I thought was very good.
Yeah, they weren't sensationalizing the news and trying to sell ads. They were actually raising money.
Yes.
And it's good. I mean, the thing about the United States is we're at our best when things are at their worst.
It's amazing how events will bring forth, as much as we, you know, the politics might get a little, we get separated, and it's as bad as it's ever been. But an event will take place, and sure enough, it'll bring us together. And I mean, donations come from sources you would not even imagine, such as a president.
A president donating $1 million.
I mean, that was a head scratcher.
That was a good one.
Yes.
He gave a nice talk, and you know, he's been doing some good stuff the last couple of days. I mean, I like to give President Trump his due when he's hitting them. And he's done pretty well. I like what he's had to say. And not just that, but, I mean, if you think back, everyone remembers Hurricane Sandy, right, in New York City?
Yes.
Pretty bad.
Staten Island got zapped bad. And I mean, a lot of
and Holland Tunnel got completely flooded. And, you know, bad stuff. And it turned out that the Congress really drug its feet. This whole conservative element that is, no, that's not our job, and blah, 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 blah. Well, I don't think it's going to be that way this time. I listened to some of the talking heads and what have you, and one of the guys, I think it was Matt Lauer, or maybe is that Cuomo guy, the young one, he had Bernie Sanders on, and he said, well, are we going to have a repeat of Sandy in the House and in the Senate? And he said, I don't think so. He's been talking around, and it sounds like they're gonna do it. And there's been criticism of the efforts that were made financially by the federal government for Sandy, that there was a lot of pork and all that stuff. But you know what? It turns out that's entirely false.
One of the things we've talked about before, in that quite often action takes place at a local level, such as the cities. And I want to think about this. You know, FEMA is something that we hear about, and unfortunately, it's often not in a positive way.
Right.
That's the federal. And what we have is we have people that obviously are used to disasters, but quite often they're not comfortable. They don't know the nuances of the location they're on.
Location, right.
So it's important to be able to coordinate and use those resources in connection with it. In addition to the fact the city is going to know, another city is going to know more about it, probably about what they're doing, because they have comparable problems. So cities helping cities quite often works better than federal government helping cities.
Yeah. And the numbers, I've been looking at, you know, how many law enforcement people and all that, and they brought in the National Guard.
Right.
And so the governor, the fellow down there in Texas, I forgot his name all of a sudden. Man, my own dear. Government. My
hey,
own
I can't
governor.
I can't forget the name of our governor, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're trying to, though.
In Illinois, yeah.
Elliot? Is it something Elliot?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, he's doing it. He's on TV every day. He's saying the right stuff. He's encouraging people. He's inspiring people. I like it. It's all good. So, yeah.
Well, what's happening down in Austin? I mean, what's
the
situation?
Let's talk about Austin. Why are we talking about city planning and zoning and all this stuff? We're talking about it because that was the downfall of Houston, and that's why they have so many problems with water, is that this zoning is out of control, and they have been paving over wetlands.
Right.
And the wetlands are valuable, like a sponge. You know, they absorb these excess rains. Now, 40 inches is 40 inches, and that may have been a lot anyway. But, you know, if it could absorb half of it, then it wouldn't have been as bad. It wouldn't have water been as high. It would have been more controllable. The levees and the dams and all that stuff really need work. And all these programs are being cut constantly. So, you know, it takes some federal help to do some of these things. And the federal government, I think this is going to be a little wake-up call, and hopefully everybody will get on board and solve this immediate problem. But then secondarily, we have to start thinking longer term. And I know this climate business gets very contentious politically, but, you know, it's a fact. The part of the problem with this was that, why did it come in? Why did it stall out? Why did it keep pouring buckets and buckets of rain for days? Part of it was the temperature of the Gulf. The temperature of the Gulf is a lot higher than it's ever been. So that keeps the kind of dynamic between the upper atmosphere and the lower atmosphere from happening, and there's no movement. Instead, there's rain. So that's how we got in this mess. That's why zoning is important. That's why planning is important. They need to start thinking about it before they pave over this stuff. Now, Austin, you asked about Austin. Austin has a program. They're very concerned about water in general because they don't have much. So their efforts go in a slightly different direction, but they work under the situation that Houston's in. When we get a deluge of rain, out where we live, we're above an aquifer, and that's sacred ground as far as, you know, a lot of groups in Austin are concerned. There's one called SOS, Save Our Springs. So if you're going to build out there, what you have to do is, you have a parking lot beyond so many square feet, you have to punch a hole in the earth through the rock, because it's very rocky there, and into the aquifer, and then you've got to dump a whole lot of this white rock we got everywhere, and they kind of bale it like hay in mesh, and they put these bales down there. And so what happens, water runs off of the parking lot. It's got a little oil in it from our exhaust, and that rock that they put in down there absorbs it, and clean water goes back into the aquifer. And this pays off in a huge way when we have floods, like when we first moved there 27 years ago, when there was a big rain, batten down the hatches. There's going to be flooding all over the place, and people are going to die because they don't... We don't know how to drive in the rain in Austin, I should say that.
Well, so, I think people just make bad decisions. They take a look and say, well, I can get through that, and before you know it, it just isn't happening.
Yeah,
and
they're
you get
in
yourself
river.
In trouble.
Yeah, it goes faster than you might think, and that's touched our family a little bit too. So we had a friend die in a river just like that. So, you know, these days it's different in Austin. It's different in the outlying counties around Austin. They have this program where they're taking care of the water better by trying to keep it clean, but the side effect is they're also handling flooding. We haven't had any kind of floods. We're on the corona, on the edges of Hurricane Harvey, so Austin got rain. We lost, like in our neighborhood, we lost one tree, which is pretty good because of the winds. And then water-wise, we weren't flooded in at all. We were able to get in and out, which wouldn't have happened even 10 years ago.
Wow.
So you can do something about these problems. They are not hopeless. And, you know, we're it's legitimate. It's government working. And, you know, people got to get this idea out of their heads that it's the Wild West and that every man, woman, and child for themselves. No. There's a legitimate role for government and its infrastructure.
Right. As we circle back and take a look at Houston again, we kind of inferred, we need to, as Jerry mentioned, it's good news, bad news. The Wild West, no zoning, is what has led to the tremendous growth historically of Houston, to the point now that it is the, let's see, it would be the fourth largest city in the United States when, you know, it was hardly anywhere in the top 10 for many, you know, until recently. So it's had a tremendous growth, and that growth has been fueled by the fact that there's been a lack of regulation such as zoning. But Houston is also... The fact is that they're situated where they've got these plains, like the coastal, I forget what they call the...
It was wetlands. It was
it's a wetlands. Swamp. Yeah, it's floodplains. It's whatever you want to call it. It's that ground that is near either the ocean or near rivers, that the problem is not only that we are not promoting and keeping those lands, but we're then building on them, which adds to the problem because that leads to the runoff,
right,
and the inability of these areas to soak up naturally the rain as it comes forth.
So that's there. And, you know, now you mentioned that. It reminded me, this week we got to visit where one of the places John works. He's a contractor and does contract accounting. And his last standing client is the Center for Humans and Nature. And, you know, it's great. We got to hang out with these guys and talk to them. But, you know, thinking about those people and the work they do, too often it's marginalized, and everybody kind of puts this in the area of, you know, oh, those are a bunch of eggheads. They're just doing some, they couldn't find any other honest work, and that's what they're doing. And it's terrible. It's terrible, the reputation they get in some quarters. But, you know, this is vital work because people think, oh, well, who cares about the animals, right? This is flooding. What are they going to do? Help with the flood effort? They're going to bail water? They're going to put down sandbags? No. But what happens is, like, take Yellowstone, just to move around the country a little bit. Yellowstone didn't have any wolves for a long time. And they introduced wolves. And an amazing thing happened within 5 years. It didn't take a long time. The entire ecosystem of the valley and the hills that the wolves were in changed completely. They had better foliage, the forest growth was better, the water and situation improved vastly, all because they introduced one predator that did a good job of weaning these herds and taking care of the environment. And then they also made it possible for other animals to multiply that were helpful for the environment. So people think one-dimensionally about these problems very often, but they're not. They are complicated. They're, you know, it's like health insurance. It's not simple. It's not straightforward. And there's side effects all over the place. And the good news is, if you just think in terms of nature and preserving it, you can't go wrong.
Well, it's important because Center for Humans and Nature, the group that I'm do their accounting for, their idea is that the relationship that we have with nature, whether it be plants or animals, is so vital to our well-being. I feel it myself. If I get up and I go and I start walking in the park, such as Lincoln Park, the one that we can look at, as we mentioned before, it makes you feel better as you watch animals, other human beings, and you feel sort of a silent content, you know, a calmness that will soothe your ego or how you feel, your nerves or whatever is bothering you. So they realize, my group, the organization, Center for Humans and Nature, it's important that we preserve those relationships.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they're looking at things such as the fact that urban areas are now getting more animals, more animal diversity, because what's happening is these animals, as they get, they're kind of pushed around a little bit out there in the some of the other areas, they're looking for food, they're looking for new places to live. So right now, coyotes are a part of our animal population here in the city of Chicago.
And they do a good job.
Yeah, they do. So there is a lot of studies being done. And Chicago, Center for Humans and Nature works closely with Lincoln Park Zoo, which does a good job of working with other urban areas to get a sense of what your animal population is, how they're handled, what they're doing, where they're going, etc. So it's important that we maintain that nature and that balance for us to survive as human beings.
Yeah, and yes, psychological and it's physiological to an extent too. I mean, just the environment itself improves drastically. And, you know, we're looking in Chicago, they've got a crime problem. You know, there's a murder problem here. And we were noting that this month has been the lowest that it's been in a long time, and it's partially because of the weather. The weather's gotten really nice and really cool.
It's cool. It's been for the last 3 weeks, and I it's just kind of a bug of mine. And believe me, there are exceptions to this rule. But it's amazing when we have a hot summer, tempers flare, and before you know it, gangs are going against gangs, and families are going against their own.
Yeah.
It's just my little thing, and you, quite often you can take a look at some of the warmer cities, such as New Orleans, Baltimore, Miami, or whatever, and the heat index will make things get a little violent.
Yeah, so. it's amazing, and you know, in general, you know, people always say, "Oh, feelings," you know, you can't eat feelings for dinner, but yeah, you can kind of, you know. If people aren't killing themselves and they feel good, they're productive, they get jobs, they contribute, it all works. It's part of it. And also weather. A lot of the weather things, we can offset a lot of what's going on with the climate change by just restoring the natural habitats of these animals. The animals make it possible for the trees and other things that really help regulate weather, keep the oxygen level high enough so we don't all get brain dead.
Well, I'll tell you, cities such as Chicago all have, within the city planning, urban forestry sections. And I know that some nonprofits do. I mean, what they do is they take tree inventories. They're looking to make sure what diseases might be with certain trees and what trees work better in certain areas, etc. And so, yeah, I mean, we know the importance of trees because of carbon dioxide and greening and how that makes our climate much better. Of course, carbon dioxide, reducing that will then make the climate change problem. I mean, it all kind of fits together if we take a look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody thinks about these. Some of the fad diets even affect this stuff. You know, the fact that a lot of people are really getting into grass-fed and free-range chickens and all these things. That actually helps, too, in a roundabout way, is that what happens is that more land that had been cleared and denuded of foliage, and therefore think higher carbon dioxide, right?
Yep.
Everything's bad, so not good. So you start doing that. Now, if you're a farmer and you're a young guy and you want to start out in farming, how are you going to compete against Archer Daniels Midland, you know, this monster that just farms everything with these machines and robots? That's hard. But if you say, I just need 100 acres, and I'm going to let it go natural, and I'm going to have chickens, and I'm going to beef. You can charge more for that.
What was that corporation you just mentioned? Archer?
Daniels Midland, ADM.
Yeah, you know, they just moved from Decatur, their corporate headquarters, back up to Chicago.
Well, we're going to have to get to work on those guys.
Fact is that it's crazy here in Chicago. As much as our state has got financially the worst in terms of their debt, primarily because of pensions, it just seems like the business community is thriving, and it's kind of, you kind of say, how can this happen? How can we have so much both. Good going for us and be, you know, under so much debt at a city level and also at a state level. So,
but they're doing it. I think Chicago's doing a good job. You know, the Alley program that I think the Young Daly started, where mm-hmm. he started taking out the pavement off and started using stone and sand.
There is a lot of green. You know, there's one thing that our mayor Daly has. You know, his whole legacy has taken a few shots here and there. But there's one thing that they'll never take from him, and that is the fact he was a tree hugger.
He was.
And he had a lot, and he felt it was important that we keep the tree population not only up, but continue to make it much more than it was before he started as mayor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was a guy that was really good for the environment. He took the Miggs Airport, you know, there's a nice slab of concrete with runoff, and decided one night, you know what, we don't need that airport. And he illegally went out and had an excavation, put big X's in that airport runway so that it could not be used anymore. And now what we have is we have an extension of our park system, Northerly Island, which is has been, what they've done is they've planted a lot of natural wildlife, which of course then attracts animals.
Yeah.
And so it's been a very positive thing. And hey, that's a place you can go out and watch a concert and have some fun too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing with all this stuff. There's nothing wrong with beauty.
Yep.
That's what works.
And there's always a lot happening. And for fact, we've been fortunate since you've been up here, Jerry, that we've had an opportunity to see a concert at Wrigley. You've seen a baseball game down at the White Sox Park, and we just arranged for you to go back to Wrigley because you just couldn't stay away from it and
see
a baseball game tomorrow.
I know we're going to go to another baseball game tomorrow.
What are we doing tonight?
Oh, well,
more baseball.
Okay. Let's talk. So, yeah, at my insistence, I said, before we went to this ball game last week, I put some stuff on Facebook about it. People have seen some pictures. But it's a great, great park. I love going there. It was really nice. It's a big park. It has a lot of seats. But, you know, it's got also a lot of stuff for kids to do and families, very family friendly. And they have events all the time. And when we were there last time, they had Elvis Night. And that was really cool. They had lots of Elvis impersonators.
Now, Jerry hasn't mentioned the name of the ballpark because it's constantly changing.
And it's stupid. It's a stupid name. I'm going to say that, John. It's a stupid name.
Yeah, so in fact...
Say it. Say the stupid name.
Well, Guaranteed Rate Park. So in other words, the baseball team has sold out its soul for money and come up with a... In fact, when you take a look at the ad, what it is, it's Guaranteed Rate, so it's a company that finances homes. And so you see an arrow going down on the billboard, and you say, wait a minute, going down, that doesn't sound
down
good.
Down is bad.
Yeah, you know, it's like you don't need to describe the woeful season that the Cubs are having by your arrow. I mean, it was almost like prophetic,
wow.
You know, that we had that happen.
You've got to change that arrow. Yeah, but anyway,
sure. So it's
nice park.
Yeah,
nice park. It's like a minor league park almost.
It is like a minor league park, but, you know, that isn't something that would have been said back in 1990 when that ballpark was built. And much as we've talked about how planning can work,
right.
This is a mind-boggling way. I'll just spend a few minutes describing a little bit of the history about what was originally the new Comiskey Park, which is based upon the name of the old Comiskey Park, which is situated right there. So back in the late 1980s, the owners of the White Sox, headed by Jerry Reinsdorf, decided that they needed a new facility, and they needed a new facility that was to cut down the cost as much as they could. They wanted to have the participation of the city government to help them and the state government.
Right.
And, of course, that participation, that's just another word. We want a handout. We want money.
Right.
We want to, and so what they did is they held up the city by threatening to go to Tampa, and that was sort of their ace in the hole, the way that their fallback position put pressure on. And sure enough, the government, whether it the state government and the city government, did what they needed to do and basically bent and bowed, and the result was that the Chicago White Sox were able to get what they wanted. The problem is what they wanted wasn't necessarily for the best interest of the public and the fans that had to go to the ballpark. They had very, very little public input in terms of their park. And so what they decided to do was they decided to build a park that was comparable to the Kansas City Park, which was a good park, but it was built like 20 years ago. And it's sort of like saying, well, you know what? We're going to copy something that was like old, and we're going to have a nice park. Well, things change. Things get better. There are always improvements. Within a year of, so their design was a park that was not have all the intimate amenities that would be possible in a what's called a retro park, which I'll describe in a second. But the other thing they did is they basically scorched the earth around the ballpark and made it a vast parking lot rather than having a little bit of urban fabric there.
A little neighborhood.
Neighborhood. So they're in really the park, it's important that when you have a ballpark that you build it within the context of your environment, your setting right there.
Right.
It's just like a building. You're not going to build a 100-story building in the middle of a residential area. And any building, and including a building which we weren't going to mention, but the Trump building is way too big for the footprint it is at.
Yeah, agreed.
And even down in the city, there can be situations like that. But getting back to the White Sox Park, so they've got these vast parking lots that this looks like a park that should be in the suburbs, not in the city. So they also built it so that it was going to be a 47,000 to 48,000 capacity, with an upper deck that, well, bring your you better bring your binoculars and also
oxygen.
Yeah, and in fact, I told Jerry a story about it. I invited a friend back, you know, when the parks first opened, to go to the game, and we got in our seats. He sat down, and the national anthem was being played, and I noticed he wasn't standing up. The seats were so steep, and he was so afraid of heights. He says, "The next time I get up, I'm leaving."
Wow, that's high. Well, they fixed all that.
The fix is I would say that they did an incredible job, you know, short of leveling the ballpark.
Right.
And what they did is they decided to at least take. Here's what's happened since then. Within months of that ballpark opening, Baltimore decided what they were going to do was they were going to build what was called a retro park. What they did was they basically they made a park that had the best of the old ballparks with all the amenities of a new ballpark. And because of, you know, construction can be done in ways now that couldn't be done before, the having, you know, like pillars that might be in the way, you know, visually seats that you would have that you couldn't necessarily see because of a pole, most of that is gone. Because the construction methods that are used now have got to be a lot better than that wave of historic ballparks that took place in the teens, back, you know, between 1905 and 1920.
Right.
So that's the wave of parks that brought us Fenway and brought us Wrigley, and also the original Comiskey.
Yeah, which was a cool ballpark, but it was just it wasn't kept up.
It wasn't maintained well, and so as a result, that was the reason that the Reinsdorf and the White Sox could holler and scream that they needed a new ballpark.
And they did.
So what the good news about the ballpark down on the south side is that its lower deck is as good as any in the majors. It's got 33 rows, which is a lot less. So, and you can see from practically everywhere. As you circle around the concourse, you are looking out onto the field. And so you can be walking in the outfield, you can be walking in the third base side, first base side. You always have a view of the action, and you're relatively close. So the lower deck's fine. So all they really had to do was work on the upper deck. They ended up cutting the top seven rows off. They put over the side of it, a roof on it, on the top, which kind of gave it a little more intimate feel.
Yeah, it did.
And now what you've got is you've got a ballpark, and you can take this to a bar and win it, a bet. You've got a ballpark that is smaller in capacity than Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
It seats about 40, while Wrigley seats 41.
It's
close, but, you know, we're not talking, you know, it's a difference. And when you think about the fact that Wrigley at one time was seating 36, and the new ballpark down there was 47, shows you where the thinking is going in terms of the ballparks. So the intimacy that Jerry was talking about is because the lower deck is as good as it is, and the other thing is, of course, the White Sox don't quite draw as well. So when you go down there, you're going to get a good seat.
I'm going to say yet. I'm a fan.
Yeah, we could be talking about the revival of the White Sox and their efforts to make their team good by doing an incredible job of getting a lot of prospects. They're in a rebuild mode.
Yep.
And it's fun. We're going to have fun down at the ballpark tonight.
Well, and one of the reasons we're going to have fun is tonight is Grateful Dead night.
And this is ironic
because John has the last Grateful Dead shirt that they gave out. It has the Sox on it, and their logo, and the Grateful Dead logo, the skull and all that cool stuff. And now, so I saw that, and he said, "Well, Jerry, I feel bad. You did not get a Green Day T-shirt when we were at Wrigley." I said, "I didn't like them. They were white, and they didn't look that good, and I don't like white T-shirts." And so I said, "To tell you the truth, John, I really want one of those Grateful Dead T-shirts like you got." And I'm not necessarily a Grateful Dead diehard, but I do like the band, and I liked a lot of things they did. And I thought, well, geez, I'd love to have that T-shirt. So we were sitting at the game last week, and what happened, John?
Well, what happened was that I had to tell them that shirt that I got was a promotion shirt that you would only get, was a limited quantity that you got when you came to the ballpark. Because it had Grateful Dead and White Sox on it. Now, the reason they did this 2 years ago was that the... Grateful Dead had a reunion, the remaining four members of the band after the death of Jerry Garcia in 1995, they decided they're going to regroup for a 10th anniversary. And so in 2015, they had a couple places they had this, but the biggest by far event was having three consecutive days at Soldier Field, which seats 60,000. And I'll tell you right now, it was a tough ticket. And they had people coming from all over the country to be a part of this. So it was a big event. So as a result of that event, the White Sox wanted to commemorate and recognize that. So they handed out T-shirts in 2015. So here I am saying, Jerry, sorry about that. You weren't here in 2015. You didn't get a T-shirt. Sorry.
Yep.
Well, then all of a sudden, this woman comes up and notices my shirt and says, "Wow, are you going to be here a week from now when the Grateful Dead night?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" She says, "Yeah, they're going to be giving out T-shirts for the Grateful Dead." and it isn't like they're going to be back at the reunion or anything.
No.
They had a very successful promotion, and they said, "What the hell, let's do it again."
Yeah, it's like an Elvis night.
Yeah, so sure enough, I got on my phone right away, and I got on my phone and just bought tickets, because it is a very limited, there were only 1,750 of those T-shirts going to be given out tonight. So we have got the vouchers for the shirts, and we're looking forward to another good
great
night
game
at the old ballpark.
Yeah, and plus, this one has tie-dye.
Yeah, it's a tie-dye shirt. It's a color tie-dye shirt with a nice emblem with the White Sox and the Dead on it.
Yeah.
So it'll be a little different. It'll be a new shirt for me, as if I needed another shirt. But in fact, I've gotten to the point now where I've got about 25 or 30. And one thing about the White Sox, to pitch them a little bit, they have got the best promotions. In fact, as we sit here, because the weather's rather cool, we've decided to break out these winter hats.
We'll have a picture. That's going to be our cover.
Yeah, if you go to the website in the Bro Show, you will see a picture of us for this podcast with us with these hats, because the wind is a little brisk off the lake and it's 60 degrees. And we thought, what the heck? This gives us a chance to wear these wonderful new hats that I was able to get.
Uncle Buck hats.
Yeah, Uncle Buck. Yeah.
Remember?
John.
This hat angers a lot of people. And it gets a reaction, let's just put it that way.
And somebody said to me, "Well, you might need to wear that hat tonight to watch the ball game. I think it's going to be a little bit warmer, but you know, you can never be too sure when it comes to weather. Always dress with another layer, because you can always peel it off."
That's it. So we're going tonight. We're going to see the Grateful Dead. I'm hoping I'll maybe have an acid flashback when I get that T-shirt, John. We'll see. So keep an eye on me. Don't let me get in any trouble. So let's tie this together a little bit, too. One of the things here, there's a theme. And there's even a follow-up theme that comes from the Green Day concert we went to last week. Here's two bands, Grateful Dead and Green Day. They both have massive followings for different reasons, but they have their followings, and they're different kinds of music and all that good stuff. But what's interesting to me is that rock concerts, rock concert followings, punk rock bands, all that stuff, Grateful Dead, they have their own fans, and their fans like to behave a certain way and all that. Now, the Grateful Dead became the most successful touring band in the world while Jerry Garcia was alive. And the way they did this was they had a very, very laissez-faire approach to everything, whether it was ticketing, food, drugs, anything. And people, when they went to a Dead concert, it was usually they went to three concerts, you know, and they camped out. And they, all this stuff. So when the city had a concert like that, a little mayhem, but also some goodness too, and it was nice. And if you were an audio kind of guy, you could take your equipment and plug in to the amp head that the Dead were using. They would let you plug in to get recordings so you could bootleg their music. I mean, that's the extent of it. So you look at how open that whole thing is, and then you think, well, isn't that great? But we read this article that was really revealing and very thoughtful. They said, well, it's that reputation and that legend that Jerry Garcia was in no small way responsible for that actually kind of killed the poor guy. He could not stop using drugs, and it killed him.
Well,
he couldn't restrict himself. You know, he couldn't recast himself as that guy who didn't do that. And so then you look at Green Day, and you go, well, you know, they charge... they don't charge high prices, actually. Their prices are pretty good for their tickets. But they don't have, like, people going city to city to listen to them unless the cities are very close. And also, they've really tightened everything up. And, like, John and I were trying to get backstage to meet Billy Joe, and, you know, we were told by the tour manager, you know, we don't do that anymore. And that's... that. And because... why? Well, actually, they're trying to remain relatively sober because they want to keep doing this the rest of their lives. They don't want to have to... crater. And 4 years ago, as we talked about on another podcast, Billy Joe did have some pretty bad episodes of just going nuts on stage and melting down. And he was taking prescription drugs constantly and lost control. The one thing he talks about in his music all the time. Again, the legend kind of follows you. So you have to do something to... freedom and a little bit of chaos is a good thing. It promotes creativity and growth, just like Houston. The chaos of no zoning does create growth and create opportunity. But you have to rein it in a little bit so that you don't have 40 inches of rain and the problems that come along with that. Or if you do, you have to be able to deal with it. And so it's the same thing. This whole theme of, you know, liberation and restriction, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. You have to balance them out and you have to continually tune it. It's not something you can set in stone and say, well, that's done.
Right.
It's a
you
process.
Need change. I mean, planning is also, you need a constant change. But as I take a look at the comparison of these two groups, I see groups where we're talking not concerts, but we're talking events. Going to see a Green Day concert, as we talked about in our last podcast, is an event. And Grateful Dead was an event in its own way, a special way. Not the same. It was a different experience.
Yep.
And I think what catered a lot more to the Dead's having following is that their music, what they were going to play from one night to the other, you didn't know. I mean, they had a lot of different, they had a lot of music,
and they would
pull out something, and of course their songs would go for a long period of time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, a lot of 7-minute songs.
Dongs. And so what that does is that means that going, for example, when they came to Chicago for three nights in 60,000, it's a tough ticket because a lot of people wanted to go to all three concerts because they knew each concert was going to be a lot different than the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
amazing. It's interesting. It's interesting. And what's interesting is how this all ties into what's going on right now today with the weather, oddly. You know, it all works together. If you think, people got to think.
Well, you know, we always talk a little bit on the film side of this, and I know we've talked entertainment, but sometimes we talk specifically about film.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, John. We were trying to think earlier of the name of the film. There's a Grateful Dead film out that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. I think it's called A Long Strange Trip. Is that true?
That is true.
You really?
Win a Cupid
I got
doll.
It.
You win a Cupid doll.
Oh,
no doubt.
I need that Cupid doll.
So
okay, good.
Long Strange
Tell us
Trip.
About this thing.
The thing is, with the Grateful Dead, what happened was in 2017, a documentary. Now, I'll tell you, in terms of credibility, quality, etc., When I found out that Martin Scorsese was going to be the executive producer of this, it gets some, you know, you get some cred right away.
Oh, well, he's done other things like this with Dylan, for instance.
So, in other words, he's got the experience. He's put a nice product out in the past, so that gets off to a good start. What you would expect if you had a Grateful Dead, it came out in 2017, and it had a very, if you are saying, gee, I didn't see that was even at the theater, well, there's a good reason. It played a week in L.A. and a week in New York, and then it went to, within a couple of weeks after that, it is being streamed on Amazon. So that's how quick it's been under the radar without a doubt in terms of a release to the public.
That's a very Dead ethic. I mean, that is how they roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just perfectly in keeping with the personality of the band.
Now, here's another thing that you would expect from a documentary. How long would you think a Grateful Dead documentary, how long would it be?
4 inches.
Four inches?
Talking about something else, sorry. 4 hours.
Another Cupid doll for the man.
It's
just minutes shy of 4 hours.
Wow.
And so you're saying, oh dear, I mean, I guess if you're a Deadhead, you go, that'd be something nice to watch. And that's what my initial reaction was. But the fact is that I've gone on, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, have seen this yet. But I'm intrigued because it's gotten some good reviews, even by by Variety. And the one that really impressed me the most was Roger Ebert. The late Roger Ebert was a well-known national film reviewer.
I think he was the greatest.
He was incredible, prolific in quality.
And thoughtful.
And here's a guy who could easily write about anything. He'd go over to India to talk about their movie industry, and before you know it, you'd be getting this article about Calcutta, and it's like you were there. He just had an incredible ability, and he started very young. He only worked for the Chicago Sun-Times, his first job out of University of Illinois, and he stayed there until his death. Unfortunately, he died young. But his website is being kept up by his wonderful wife, and they do have a series of people that review. They've got some very good reviewers, and they're tough. They're not easy. I've read some of them. They gave it 4 stars. They gave this doggone documentary 4 stars, and it's in 6 different segments.
Is that out of how many stars?
4 to 4.
Oh, really?
Yeah, top.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're,
I know.
We're 5 star down south.
Yeah, I know. 5 stars, 4 stars. You're right. Good point. I also, and I read a couple other reviews by movie film reviewers who are not even, didn't care about the Grateful Dead, but really liked the documentary. So it is intriguing. It kind of captivates my interest.
We're going to have to see it, I think. But the truth is that in the, well, now I've been here how many days? 8 days.
Yeah.
We're going for 10. So,
We're working on it.
You're working on it. So our time has been so packed. We really have not, my mother really gave me hell the day before yesterday because I wasn't calling her enough. And I told her, Mom, John and I are just like dropping at night, falling asleep in our chairs. We're so tired from all the stuff we're doing. And we don't have 4 hours to carve out of our lives. In fact, we're scheduled tomorrow to watch Time Traveler's Wife. That's going to be one of our films. That's one of our films we're going to do here in the coming episode. So, you know, we no way we're going to get a four-hour movie in. But I am, like John, intrigued, and I am going to go on Netflix and definitely watch it. So... Yeah.
It's all good. So, man, we've done a lot. Well, you've been here. Jerry will be going back to Austin in a couple of days. You know, what we've tried to do is, you know, because obviously at our age, in addition to our physical and health challenges, we've felt, you know, we don't want to do too much. So I think we've met a nice balance where we've rested and done various things that are not quite as physically active.
Right.
And then mix that up with green... I guess the highlight for me in terms of, you know, going out on the limb and letting it all hang out was going to see Green Day.
Yeah, that was amazing. Still, I'm still buzzing from that kind of tune.
But I mean, what we've been able to do is things such as all of a sudden, you know, come up here to this wonderful beach bar and grill and talk to him and say, we'd like to do a podcast, and here we are. Like, we're on the shores of Lake Michigan. We've got Lincoln Park. We've got And in fact, before we started the podcast, I took a little bit of time trying to find a cloud in the sky and was unable to do it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is just it's a postcard perfect day. It might be a little on the cool side, but other than that, this is really choice. So we've been very fortunate to do a lot of different things, and I feel so good we were able to do this podcast out here and also the one we did earlier at the Clark Street Ale House.
I should point out that we did a commemorative t-shirt, a Brochow commemorative t-shirt.
I can't believe we didn't do that.
Timing's perfect. We're good. Hey, here's the deal. So we said, okay, limited edition. We cut it off last Sunday, and after we did our podcast, and we had a lot of people, including my sister-in-law, Claudia, who really wanted one of those t-shirts, couldn't get it. So we brought the campaign back to life. It's going to end in a couple of days, so I'm telling you now, when you hear this, go get the t-shirt, because it's going to close out pretty soon again.
It's now or never.
Yeah, and part of the reason we did it, too, was we had kind of forgotten, hey, we got another day for another podcast, and we'd completely forgotten. So now, you know, it's very appropriate. We have another Chicago t-shirt that's ready to roll. It's the same one we had before, the Clark Street Ale House t-shirt, which is a great t-shirt. It's got that same great fabric. It's perfect on a day like this when it's cold and you might have gynecomastia and your nipples are a little tender. And let me tell you, this t-shirt's the one to have. My nipples feel great. How about
hey,
you,
look,
John?
I used eponymous. You can use
Okay.
Well, how about now we're even.
Yeah. So in any case, I did say it right, too.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Not hard word. So in any case, whether you have tender nipples or not, you got to have this t-shirt. And you get three colors. This one, you get a choice. You get the standard blue that we had in the last one, which a lot of people raved about. But now we got a gunmetal gray to commemorate the drop in the murder rate while I was here. And then also we got black, which was the original color we started out with. So this is, you got some choices now. Got to think about the color. You got to get one of these t-shirts. Now we need 5 in order to print. Right now we've got one. It's my sister-in-law, Claudia. She ordered it. So if you're out there, you got to get this t-shirt for my sister-in-law. If she doesn't get a t-shirt, I'm going to be in hot water. So you got to get one of these things, not just because they're beautiful and they make your nipples feel great, but also because my sister-in-law, Claudia, who I love dearly, needs one of these t-shirts pretty badly. So, and she said, you know, we got a lot of mail, John, on Facebook. It's not really mail. It's like postings. But a lot of people have really enjoyed the work we've done here, the posts on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn that I've put out telling everybody what we're up to and what we're doing.
Right.
And people say, one word keeps coming up. The last word I would have expected, inspiration. People are inspired. The two old coots with cancer are out there doing this. In fact, last night I talked to my friend Steve Hathaway, who I haven't been able to talk to in some years, and we had a great talk and a great visit, and he said the same thing. He said, you know, you got to keep doing what you're doing because you're inspiring people. And I said, which I find incredulous, we're goofballs, we're nerds, you know. No one would call us inspirational.
Yeah, we're just cutting up here on a podcast, you know, just having a good old time.
And
that's what makes it fun for us, and also, you know, that's hopefully what makes it good listening.
It makes it good listening, and, you know, if it's just like what we're talking about with the animals in nature. You know, if it makes you happy, it makes you healthy, and that's what we're doing. We're extending our lives as part of our treatment doing this podcast. That's why we really got into it in a kind of passionate way. I don't think either of us expected us to knock out 25 episodes, but that's what we've just done.
We're just starting the second
season two, episode two. Episode two, and you know, be on the lookout. You got to listen to all of these because we're gonna have some new music, intro and outro music. We're holding back a little bit, building up a little suspense and stuff like that. But yeah, we got this microphone that we've never had before. We're thinking about getting another one so that our podcasts that we do on the fly when we're in separate cities will have the same great sound quality. We won't have Lake Michigan.
We won't have those waves.
So. Take a moment, enjoy the waves, and we will be back.
Sounds like a winner.
All right. Thanks, John.
Okay.